The cleaner's bags. Pinned to the bags were lists of when and where each item had been worn. With a touch of drama, Daniel Shanks, an usher, came in and announced Hines's call. Also present were Lindsay M. Lineweaver, Laura's assistant and personal aide, and Maria Galvan, the Bush's personal housekeeper from Austin. In photos, Lineweaver could be seen with Laura carrying a huge bag that held the First Lady's extra contact lenses and CoverGirl makeup. It was 12 days before the election, and Laura had been out campaigning in New York, New Hampshire, and Pennsylvania. Today was her only break from the campaign, and she and her husband were planning to enjoy a rare dinner together with their daughters and Pamela Nelson. The next day, Laura was set to leave again for New Hampshire. The president was heading for Pennsylvania. Earlier that afternoon, after Hines's public apology, Laura had told reporters that there had been no need for her to do so. "I know how tough it is, and actually I know those trick questions," she said. Laura did not take Teresa's call. Instead, she turned to Andrea G. Andy Ball, her chief of staff in the White House and during the years Laura had been First Lady of Texas. "Let's not make this into anything," she said. "Call her back and tell her that Mrs. Bush understands that when you talk to the media, things get quoted that you didn't quite say or mean to say." Ball went back to her office in the East Wing and called Hines's assistant. Unlike Hillary Clinton, who moved the First Lady's office to the West Wing, Laura has her office in the East Wing. However, she operates most of the time out of a small office in the residence portion of the White House. That office is also where she has her hair done. Ball told the assistant that if Teresa was calling about her comment, there was no need for either of them to take time out of their day to talk about it. "Mrs. Bush thinks nothing of it. I don't think Mrs. Carey meant that she never worked." Pamela Nelson had been staying overnight at the White House for several days each month for meetings of the Commission on Fine Arts, which reviews and approves architectural plans submitted by the federal and District of Columbia governments. As Laura continued selecting clothes to pack, she explained to Nelson, "If I took the call from Mrs. Carey, it would escalate. The next story will be, Mrs. Carey talked to Mrs. Bush. I don't want this to be news. I don't want reporters to grab this and start beating up on Teresa Carey. She doesn't know how to talk to the media. She blurts things out. You can't blurt." Despite Laura's excuses for Teresa Hines, her comments in the USA Today interview were not off-the-cuff responses during a high-pressure press conference. They were part of a recorded Q&A. Hines had apparently forgotten that, for 10 years, Laura had been an elementary school teacher and librarian at inner-city schools. Hines also appeared to be implying that women who don't have jobs and devote themselves to raising a family are unworthy of respect. Soon after this, Press Secretary Gordon Jandreau called Laura at the residence to say that a new Gallup poll for USA Today and CNN showed that 74% of Americans had a favorable opinion of her. Only 16% had an unfavorable opinion.
"We're going to get those 16%, Jandreau told Laura jokingly. "We're going to wring their necks and get them over to us."
The following year, Laura's approval rating would soar to 85%, according to a Gallup poll. Since opinion polls first began asking about them in 1939, no First Lady had received a higher rating. After Hillary Clinton and Oprah Winfrey, Laura Bush was the most admired woman in America. At the table that night in the pale green family dining room, Laura took the same positive approach to Teresa Hines's remark as she had in public. Bush had been campaigning that day in Iowa, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. His arrival for dinner at 8 p.m. did not have to be announced. Laura and